Hi, everyone. I'm Charlie Boyd, and welcome to the Jesus on Display podcast. Before we begin today's content, I wanted just to say thanks for supporting us here at Fellowship Greenville with your gifts and generosity. Because of your giving, we get to share resources like this podcast with you to help reach you wherever you are in your life with Jesus. If you'd like to support the ministry of Fellowship Greenville, you can head to fellowshipgreenville.org/give to get started. Thanks so much for your support, and we hope you enjoy today's episode.
Every generation tends to think that the crises that we face today are the worst ever in history. And we tend to think that our time is worse than any other time. And so that we think, well, surely this is the end. Surely this is the end. Now, let me just say, that's a very narrow American point of view. Religious and political deceivers, wars and rumors of wars, earthquakes, disease, famine, poverty, injustice, Christian persecution permeates every corner of the globe in a much greater way than we experience in this country. Now, for sure, it's bad here and it's getting worse, and I'm hoping you're praying about all of this. But you try living out your faith in a country like Myanmar, or China, or Iraq, or India, and you'll quickly realize that the magnitude of all these things, the magnitude of the tribulation that they're experiencing is much greater than anything that we face here. Now, all that to say, that's a big reason why many people are asking, why are we living in the end times? Because we tend to think that our time is the worst time, and surely Jesus is coming, true, but Jesus says, don't be alarmed. The world is messed up, and it will continue to be messed up until I come again and set things right. So the question is, what should his disciples do? What does it look like to be a faithful follower of Jesus? What does it look like to persevere? Verse 13, he says, the one who endures, in other words, the one who stands firm to the end, he says, will experience my salvation. This is about being an intentional, faithful disciple of Jesus and recognizing that that there are all kinds of social and cultural and political and religious forces and movements that will try to distract you and to pull you towards apathy on the one hand, or to pull you into some weird form of religious extremism that takes our focus off of loving God and loving others and puts the focus on me and my comfort and me being beamed up here before it gets beamed out of here before it gets really, really bad. Jesus says, the one who stands firm, the one who follows my teaching, the ones who just, and this is encouraging, the ones who just hang on to me. When you look around and you're going like, what? What just happened? What did I just hear in the news? He says, the ones that hang on to me will experience the reality of my salvation in the midst of this crazy world. That's mission number one. That's mission number one. And then he says in verse 14, and this gospel of the kingdom will be proclaimed throughout as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. And so Jesus is telling his disciples here that the fall of the Jerusalem is not the end of the world, but they need to stay faithful and they need to stay on task. He's saying, stick to the mission that I'm entrusting to you. Go into all the world, preach the gospel, share the gospel, make that what you're talking about. It's a worldwide mission. Has to go to all the nations of the earth. So how long will that take? Well, at least 2,000 years, right? When will it end? Jesus says, I don't know. I don't know. Nobody knows. Only the Father knows. So what do? He's given us marching orders, and we're supposed to be obsessed with the gospel, with seeing Jesus above all things and at the center of all things, no matter how bad those all things are. And we need to not be alarmed and not get pulled off into apathy or speculation and all the weird prophecy charts and stuff like that. All that does is stir up fear and speculation and date setting and trying to read news headlines into the Bible, which distracts us from the real mission Jesus has given us, which again is stand firm and bear witness to the good news that's in Jesus. And that's the mindset that Jesus wanted in his disciples. That's the mindset that John wants in the disciples in the early churches and those seven churches in Revelation. And that's the mindset that you and I need to cultivate when we wake up every morning. You see in this? You with me? You with me? Let's keep going. Verse 15. So, Jesus says, when you see the abomination of desolation spoken of by the prophet Daniel standing in the holy place, parentheses, let the reader understand. Now, this is Matthew's way of saying, if you want to understand what Jesus is talking about here, you got to go back and read the prophecies of Daniel, and what Jesus says here will make sense to you. And in other words, you're not going to understand what Jesus says here unless you're immersed in the Old Testament prophets. If you're not, you'll be lost. And that's what this parenthesis is telling us. And by the way, that'll be true when we get to all the strange imagery in the book of Revelation. You cannot understand Revelation apart from the Old Testament prophets like Daniel and Zechariah and Ezekiel and Joel and Isaiah. Okay, so what is he talking about here, this abomination of desolation? What's he talking about? He's talking about the fall of Jerusalem and the destruction of the temple. And Jesus has said, not one stone will be left on top of another. And now he's describing the downfall of the city as the abomination that causes desolation. Now here's how it happened. I'll show you another picture. I showed you a picture of a model of what Jerusalem and the temple complex looked like in Jesus' day. But if you go to Israel today, this is what you see. This is the evidence of the very event that Jesus said would happen. You're looking at one of the remaining walls of Jerusalem, old Jerusalem, and your temple, and you're looking at stones that Jesus said not one stone would be left on top of another. Now, all this has been excavated. It was all buried for centuries. And right there on the street, you can see, like from the people, you can see how big these stones are, about the size of cars, a lot of them. And the Jewish revolt started in 66 AD. And it concluded in 70 AD when Jerusalem fell. And again, I'm just blown away when you actually go there. And I've been there and I've seen these stones. They are absolutely massive. And so I asked myself the question when I saw it. I was like, man, how long would it have taken to take a wall like that size and dismantle it? You have to leverage those things off to get them on the ground. How long would it take to totally dismantle all these walls block by block? So the temple comes down and the destruction causes even more desolation. Now, if you go to Rome today, and Karen and I have been there as well, in Rome today, you'll see a monument called the Arch of Titus, the Arch of Titus. And Titus was the Roman general who led the siege and the battle against Jerusalem. And this monument is describing all of his great victories. And inside the arch, look at it, inside the arch is a depiction of some of his greatest battles. And what you see in this relief, in this depiction inside the arch, are Roman soldiers plundering the temple in Jerusalem. They took the city. They burned everything to the ground. They plundered the temple of all the gold and jewels and menorah. You can see the menorah there up on the wall, the candlestand that was inside the temple. They took that. And then we're told that they began to offer sacrifices on the altar of God to it, on the God of Israel, and they were making them to the gods of Rome. So they were offering sacrifices not to the God of Israel, but to their own gods, which was a statement that their God is more powerful than the God of Israel, because look, they won. They won. And Jesus says, when you, saying to his disciples, this is what's coming. He says, when you see this happening, what should your response be? He's talking to his disciples. When you see this happening, what should you do? And his answer is run. Run, head to the hills. Verse 16. Then let those who are in Judea flee to the mountains. Let the one who is on the housetop not go down to take what's inside his house. And let the one who is in the field not turn back to take his cloak. And alas, for women who are pregnant and for those days who are nursing infants in those days, pray. Pray that your flight might not be in winter or on the Sabbath. Verse 21. For then there will be great tribulation such as has not been from the beginning of the world until now, no, or ever will be. He calls this period of time when Rome invades Jerusalem and attacks it and starts to dismantle it, great tribulation like has never been before and will never be after. And he says in verse 22, and if those days had not been cut short, no human being would be saved, but for the sake of the elect, those days will be cut short. Okay, how you doing? You with me? Stay with me. It's interesting because it sounded like he was talking about Jerusalem when all of these bad things started happening. But then all of a sudden, he starts talking about a time of great tribulation will be greater than anything in human history. So what's that all about? Okay, what question is he answering? He's still answering question number one. What is Jesus doing? He's using hyperbole. Old Testament prophets and Jesus often spoke in an exaggerated way to make a very important point. Like Jesus said, if your eyes get you into trouble, poke them out. He said, in order to be my disciple, you got to hate your father and your mother. What is that? That's hyperbole, an exaggerated, shocking way to make a very important point. The point being, Jesus is saying things are going to get crazy, crazy bad. You've never seen anything like how bad it's going to be. And you may think that God's lost control, but he hasn't. So when that time comes, he's saying, don't give in, don't give up. He's saying, I'm telling you all of this ahead of time so that you stand firm. Okay, verse 29. Now, as a prophet so often does, he looks past the first mountain. Remember the chart? He looks past the first mountain to the second. So he flips to answer the second question. He's got a vision on the first mountain and a vision on the second mountain. He's answering the second mountain now. Look at verse 29. Immediately after the tribulation of those days, the sun will be darkened and the moon will not give its light, and the stars will fall from heaven, and the powers of heavens will be shaken. This is apocalyptic language, that when something terrible, bad, crazy bad happens, the whole heavens and the earth are shaken. He says, verse 30, then will appear in heaven the sign of the Son of Man, and then all the tribes of the earth will mourn, and they will see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And he'll send out his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they'll gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of heaven to the other. Look down in verse 36. Remember what he said about the second question. But concerning that day and hour, no one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but the Father only. Now look what he says in verse 37. For as it was in the days of Noah, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. For as in the days before the flood, Normal life was going on. They were eating and drinking and marrying and giving in marriage until the day that Noah entered the ark. And they were unaware. Who is he talking about? Not Noah. He's talking about people who didn't know God. And they were unaware until the flood came and swept them all away. He says, so will be the coming of the Son of Man. Then two men will be in the field and one be taken, one be left. Two women will be grinding at the mill and one will be taken and one left. Now, I know that many of you were taught that this is the rapture. I was taught that. And I even taught that myself. But this is not referring to the rapture. How do I know that? Because the context here tells us exactly what's going on. And the context is the time of Noah's flood. Everything, life was going on just as normal and usual. But when the flood came, think with me, when the flood came, Noah and his family were left safe in the ark. And the ones who were taken away in judgment. The one left, when all this goes down, is safe. The one taken is taken in judgment. And we see this same thing happening at the end of the book of Revelation. When the kingdom comes in all of its fullness, the faithful, their names will be written in the Lamb's Book of Life, and the faithful will forever be with the Lord. And those who have rejected Jesus will be taken away in judgment. Now, I'm not saying I don't believe in a rapture, but there's no rapture in Matthew 24. And for that matter, there's no rapture in the book of Revelation. See, well, what about Revelation 4? That's what all the predictive Bible teachers talk about as being the rapture. Revelation 4 is not the church being caught up into heaven before the seven-year tribulation begins. It was John being called up to heaven. There's not even any symbolism in Revelation 4 that would cause you to think, oh, this is the whole church being raptured before the great tribulation. It's just not there. Sorry. Skip to verse 42. How do we live in this crazy world? Jesus says, stay awake, for you don't know what day your Lord is coming. What question are we answering? Second question, what's the sign of your coming and the end of the age? Jesus says, I don't know. No one knows. Only the Father knows. Stay awake. You do not know what day your Lord is coming, but know this, that if the master of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore, you also must be ready. Look at this. For the Son of Man is coming at an hour that you do not expect. So let's land the plane. Summary. Jesus' disciples are walking around the temple complex. They comment on the beauty and the magnificence of the buildings. And Jesus says, oh, they're all coming down. They're all going to be destroyed. Not one stone will be left on the other. And so they have two questions. When's that going to happen? And then Jesus says, well, that's going to happen within the next 40 years, within a generation. And so then there was a second question. So what will be the sign of your coming and the end of the age? When they, again, they had these two things tied together. They're asking, when will you come as Messiah in all your glory and set up God's kingdom on earth? And he says, I don't know. You don't know. Just be ready. And he says to them, and he says to us, when the tribulation of this world, the tribulations that you experience in this world, when it gets so bad that you are tempted to think that God is not in control, when you're tempted to think that God's promises have somehow failed, know this, that God is still on the throne and he will accomplish his plans and purposes in his good time and his good way. So don't give up. And don't give in. Stay awake. Stay faithful no matter what. Stick to God's mission, His gospel mission. Stick to that no matter what. Don't let yourself become apathetic or indifferent. Don't get caught up in all kinds of end time speculation, trying to predict what's going to happen, trying to figure out when the end will come. Listen, what Jesus tells His disciples about the suffering and the persecution and tribulation coming in their future, and as we'll see, the same kind of thing is what John tells the followers of Jesus in those seven churches to whom he's writing. Same basic message. And Jesus' message to His disciples and John's message to His church is for us. It's for us. It was written to them, specific time and place, but it is for us. So how does we as God's people persevere? I wonder how many of you have heard what I taught today in Matthew 24 before. How many of you have been taught that everything that Jesus says here in Matthew 24 is pretty much still off in the future somewhere? See, the question is not, are we living in the end times? But the question is, how do we live in the end times right here, right now? That's the question. How do we live in these end times? I know your question is, but is it the end of the end of the end times? Well, we're closer to the end chronologically. That doesn't mean anything because we still don't know when. How do we live in the end times right here, right now? How do we as God's people persevere? How do we stay faithful to Jesus as this crazy world gets darker and darker? Again, from last week, Jim said, see the crucified Christ above everything and at the center of everything and keep your eyes fixed on Him. And then what Jesus says to His disciples here, He says, remember, I can come back at any moment. I don't know when I can come back. So He's saying, stay awake, stay faithful. Don't be apathetic. Don't obsess over times and dates and calendars and charts. Don't obsess over those kinds of things. He's saying this, live every day as if this were the day of Christ's return. Live every day as if today could be the day of Christ's return. Let everything else go. Focus on that. Focus on being faithful to Jesus and faithful to the mission of Jesus. And you'll experience the reality of God's salvation no matter how bad things get in your world.
The Jesus on Display podcast is produced right here at Fellowship Greenville in Greenville, South Carolina. Thanks for listening to today's episode. Follow and share this podcast with anyone who might be interested or curious about our church community or how storytelling unites us and helps us feel more connected. To actively keep up with what's going on at our church community, head to our website at fellowshipgreenville.org. Follow us on all social media platforms and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Thanks for tuning in. Grace and peace to you for your week, and we'll see you next time.